Insightful podcasts by informative hosts. Insights into Things, a podcast network.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, a podcast series taking a deeper look into entertainment and media. Your hosts, Joseph and Michelle Whalen, a husband and wife team of pop culture fanatics, are exploring all things from music and movies to television and fandom.
Welcome to Insights into Entertainment, episode 18, Marvelously Batty. I'm your host, Joseph Whalen, and my beautiful and talented co-host, Michelle Whalen.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing today, Michelle?
I am fantabulous. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good myself. So we've got a pretty full podcast for us today. In our Disney Detective segment, we have some information about a new Marvel Land Disney has announced. We've got some details on Frozen 2 and a new trailer for it. And then in our entertainment news, we have some news from Taylor Swift and a surprise performance that she had put on. Then we have some more details on The Batman.
I love how you just always say it like that, just because.
Then we'll move on to our insightful picks and some afterthoughts. I think that's everything we've got for today?
I think so.
Are we ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
All right. Go for Disney Detective.
So if Galaxy's Edge wasn't enough, let's do some more construction in California. So brace yourself, superheroes. Lovers. So Marvel already had a themed ride in Disneyland. Basically, they took the Tower of Terror and they had revamped it. It was actually back in 2017 to be Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. So now it seems that the city of Anaheim has approved building permits for a new attraction and some new construction in Disneyland. So including is a 2,071 square foot merchandise outlet complete with three canopies. Also, there's talk of a microbrewery as well. And so they haven't really confirmed yet what the new construction will be, but talks are that there will be an interactive Spider-Man ride that will let visitors take on even evil villains. And Disneyland isn't the only park that's actually getting some sort of Marvel makeover. There are actually attractions that are planned at the various parks. So Walt Disney Studios Park in Paris is planning to open their Marvel ride in 2020. Epcot in Florida will be opening their Marvel ride, which will be a Guardians of the Galaxy ride, in 2021. And Hong Kong Disneyland is planning theirs for 2023. So Marvel Land in Disneyland is actually going to be where a Bugs Land attraction was. And that was the attraction area that was inspired by the movie A Bug's Life. And it actually closed back in September of 2018. So it's been closed, you know, for a little while now. And so at the moment, there's a bunch of construction walls that are up that basically read Stark Industries, to kind of give a little teaser, obviously, about it. But again, new details are still a little fuzzy at this time. Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, though, has been voted one of the better rides in Disneyland since it opened. So it's been doing well. So now they're going to obviously theme the area to the rest of that part. But with D23 coming up at the end of August, I'm sure more information, you know, will be coming out about, you know, this and the expansion, you know, in the other parks.
So is it just Disneyland that is getting a Marvel's Land, or are they doing something in Disney World?
You weren't paying attention to what I said.
Well, I know Disney World's getting multiple rides, but are they getting a concentrated...
Epcot. Well, no. Epcot's going to have... They haven't said about full-fledged lands.
Right, that's what
like,
I'm saying.
Right, yeah, they haven't mentioned that.
Like when Galaxy's Edge was done, they did a mirror version of Galaxy's Edge in Disney World.
Right, right.
We're not talking about that.
Right,
sort of thing.
But the thing is, because they're not doing the same ride in Disneyland as they are in Disney World, because in Disney World, it's still Tower of Terror. They're not planning on changing it over anytime soon. Disney, you know, Walt Disney World in Epcot is getting the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, which
and
seems
kind of... And they're building that ride straight up. They're not converting anything.
Right.
There.
Well, they took down a ride and, you know, basically, yeah, they're building it up from scratch. They're not using a pre-existing ride, right. They're using a pre-existing sort of building.
Because last time we were down there, we saw the construction.
Yeah, they were doing
of the
huge construction.
Building.
Right, and it obviously was taking up much more than what the original space was for Universe of Energy, which is what, you know, they got rid of. But again, they're not, you know, I can't really see them doing an Epcot, you know, in Epcot, a Marvel Land. It doesn't,
right.
It doesn't fit. And it, even the fact that they're putting a Guardians of the Galaxy ride in Epcot doesn't really, in my opinion, doesn't fit either. So as of right now, there's nothing. But
it's
again,
it's almost like they had no other place to put it.
Right. It was like,
point.
Hey, where are we going to put this ride? We'll put it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where
of,
it doesn't
have an afterthought.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, D23 is coming up in August. So I'm sure we'll hear more about, you know, more about it later. So yeah. So kind of cool. Frozen 2.
So what do we have for that?
So we have the new trailer that dropped. So they had a teaser trailer, and now here is the new trailer.
Enchanted lands and into the unknown. But be careful. We have always feared Elsa's powers were too much for this world. Now we must hope.
I won't let anything happen to her.
Well, that was cool.
I know, wasn't it?
And when is that due out?
That is due out November 22nd.
Okay. Very cool.
See?
I like it.
I like cool stuff.
So that was an extended trailer from the one that was
right.
Previously
so the
released.
So the original trailer basically ended with her falling into the water. Nothing more.
Right.
This one, obviously, there's some sort of spirit animal or something with the horse.
Her Patronus? Wrong franchise. Sorry.
Wrong franchise.
Sorry.
I'm impressed that you know that you know that. But yeah, it you know, kind of makes you wonder, what's going on in the new movie? And what was interesting was there was an article that popped up a couple days later that the Disney reveals first footage of Frozen 2, and with a little bit of explanation. So there was an animation festival in France, and it was just a couple of days after the new trailer dropped that they not only displayed, debuted the first footage, but also artwork from the movie as well. So it was revealed that the story basically picks up 3 years after the original first ends. And it's an evolution and an expansion of the story of Frozen, and many of the questions raised in the first movie become the mysteries that our gang are now trying to solve in this film. And the main question basically is, why was Elsa born with these powers? Because they never really explained it. So now, you know,
because she's one of the X-Men.
Maybe, you never know. She could have been. So basically, you know, her parents obviously knew what happened. You know, a little bit more, I guess, backstory, you know, with the childhood and her parents. You know, there's a bunch of...
They always implicate the parents, like the parents are hiding something.
Right, and maybe they did. Maybe there was some sort of pact that the parents made or something. You never know. So basically, one of the scenes that they were talking about was that Elsa's father relays a tale of a battle that had happened in the forest long ago when the spirits of the forest faced off against the people of the kingdom. So that's where, you know, all those animals, you know, are coming from. Rock people come back. Maybe, you know, they...
And Elsa goes to the sea and meets Moana, right?
The Disney crossover
time.
Wouldn't that be cool? But all of the original cast, Elsa, Anna, Kristoff, and even Olaf are in the movie, and they basically go off on this adventure to try and help Elsa, I guess, figure out who she, you know, who she is. Maybe it's a Lion King crossover because you never remember who you are and all that. So again, you know, they were showing the scene of her swimming deep in the ocean and trying to, you know, turn things into ice.
Well, she's in a good spot for that. Right?
She is, you know, so, you know, lots of there were more scenes that they showed in France that kind of brought more things to question. The film is actually still in production right now. It has about 7 more weeks of animation to complete and then 10 weeks of special effects to be put in. And it's due out in France actually on November 20th and then in the U.S. on the 22nd. One of the things they mentioned was that on a French poster, it shows the four of them walking past a lake in a bright sun, but the reflection of the lake is dark red. So
maybe she turns to the dark side. And there's a Star Wars crossover.
Right.
I love the fact that they're all speculating on this like it's a Marvel movie now.
Yeah, basically. Well, you know, but it'll be interesting to see because obviously we know from when Frozen, the original, came out, how underwhelmed Disney was.
Oh, yeah, from a marketing standpoint.
From a marketing standpoint and merchandise standpoint. You know, you couldn't find anything.
And all the knockoffs came out.
All the knockoffs came up. And you know, even, you know, for our daughter, I had a dress made for her, you know, that wasn't even a Frozen dress.
It still qualifies for the drinking game, though.
It does still the drinking game. Do you want to explain?
It's Elsa, drink.
Yeah, the big joke was when you would walk around a Disney park, and, you know, because every little girl was basically dressed as Elsa. It was a drink. And then what was really funny was when we got our, what, she was like 9 at the time, when we were, you know, got her you know, and she would see it and didn't understand when you had to take a drink, it was alcohol. And yeah.
So, for the record, we weren't drinking alcohol.
No, we weren't. We weren't drinking anything, actually. It was just when we saw Elsa, we said drink.
That was just the running joke.
So that is it for Disney Detectives.
All right. Let's move on to our entertainment news. So first up, we have Taylor Swift. Gave a surprise performance. Why don't you give us a little background on that and then we can take a look at it.
Sure. So Taylor Swift actually gave a surprise performance at the Stonewall Inn just the other night. Taylor Swift, if you don't know, she is actually very pro-LGBT and very active, you know, in the community and supporting GLAAD as well. Her one song actually gives shout-outs to GLAAD and the LGBT community, and she actually made a surprise performance in front of about 100 people at New York Stonewall Inn. And that's actually, you know, for those of you that don't know, that's where the riots were in 1969. So this being Pride Month, it's, you know, and a big anniversary for it. This was kind of cool. So let's play a little clip.
So that was kind of a special appearance she did there, huh?
Yeah, obviously surprised everybody that was in the crowd. So after a rousing pair of songs from Sarah Bareilles, including her version of Brave, that basically had, you know, everybody singing along, Swift was greeted by the evening's headliner, Modern Family star Jesse Tyler Ferguson, who you kind of saw in that clip. She thanked him for inviting her and basically said, oh, I heard Jesse, you know, this is his favorite song when he does karaoke. So basically everybody sang along, you know.
So doing karaoke with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's not a bad night.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so before she performed, AEG, which promoted the event, presented Stonewall with a $50,000 check to support its Stonewall Inn Gives Back initiative to develop LGBTQ anti-racist training standards. To help support the fund. So that was kind of cool. And GLAAD actually, the organization GLAAD, actually released a statement on Friday saying that they've been getting an influx of small donations in the amount of $13. People go, what's that for? Well, 13 happens to be Taylor Swift's favorite number. So she's getting fans that are just, hey, I can't give a whole lot of money, but $13 I can give.
Right, just
and they're giving
of
it
her support. Nice.
Right, exactly. So thought that was kind of cool. The organization actually started a Facebook fundraiser for fans to support its LGBTQ advocacy work during Pride Month, choosing $1,300 as its goal. Again, Anthony Ramos, who is the director of talent engagement for GLAAD, basically said Taylor Swift is one of the world's biggest pop stars, and the fact that she continues to use her platform to help support us and to get the Equality Act signed is a true sign of being an ally. Earlier this month, Swift had urged her fans to contact senators in her home state of Tennessee and elsewhere to demand the passage of the Equality Act. And later that night, she made a special appeal to the iHeart Wango Tango concert in Los Angeles, appearing in rainbow garb, leaving fans to wonder if the colors were going to be part of her new video, I guess. Yes. So nice to see. I gotta say, I'm not really a fan of Taylor Swift. Like, I don't love her, but I don't hate her. Like, her music is very catchy. It's very poppy. You know, I think for younger girls and anybody else, you know, she's a decent role model to, you know. Yeah, she's had some dating issues, but who hasn't?
Well, and she,
you know,
she hasn't found herself mired in some of the controversy that so many other pop stars have.
Oh, absolutely.
Which makes her, at least from a parent standpoint, you know, someone that I don't mind taking on that role model standpoint. Because she always, I mean, she's got a history of supporting well-known charities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Good causes. She does great things to give back to her fans.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
And it's nice to see someone like that take their notoriety and put it towards a good cause like this.
Absolutely, yeah.
We were just watching a documentary on public television about the whole movement and everything and where they had started out and seeing where it came from and where they are today. It's nice to see the progress that's been made. It's even nicer to see celebrities jumping on to support that now to help make even more progress, because it's not where it needs to be.
Right, right.
But it's a lot better than where it was.
Right, and it's nice to see, you know, somebody using their celebrity for good.
Absolutely.
You know, and in a very positive light.
Absolutely. Nice.
Yeah. So, in the Batman news.
The Batman.
You just make me laugh. So now it seems that more news is coming out. It seems like every couple of days, more stuff comes out about it. So it seems that the four lead villains have been revealed. And some not surprising. And one, at least for me, was kind of like, huh?
So are these the four villains that are going to be in the first movie?
This is what they're kind of speculating, because, again, it is supposed to be a trilogy of movies, so I don't really know, you know, they basically, so it seems like there's this new, I guess, scoop company who's out there, who they were the ones that kind of broke this news, and again, they're kind of new to the scoop game, so to speak. So they're, you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. You know, I don't know where they got their sources from. So, you know, some of it might be true. Some of it might not be. So basically, these are the villains for now that have been reported to be the four foes that William Pattinson, who will be
the four fiend foes.
Say that five times fast. Dare you. So, according to the website, the Riddler is actually kind of the main villain, I guess. It's kind of a surprise, but not. But fans have been hoping to see a more comic-accurate take on the character for years. Reeves is said to be looking for a male actor of... He really doesn't have a type that he's looking for right now. Basically, just between the ages of 30 and 40. So they're not looking for anybody really specific right now.
So that rules me out then, unfortunately.
Right. You're a little too old for that.
Young. Too young for it.
Right. You're too... Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Then, obviously, the second villain is Penguin. And again, Penguin has been around, and obviously he was very prominent in Gotham as well, but they're looking to make it a different type of Penguin, not the type that was in Gotham. They're actually looking for a short, obese man. See, you're too tall.
Oh, I have the obese part.
You got the big part. But somebody with a long nose...
Obviously. You know, prosthetics wouldn't work for that, right?
Yeah, right. And again, it sounds like they're going for, you know, more comic-y. So I'm thinking more like a Danny DeVito.
I think they need to bring Danny DeVito back to play it.
But they want somebody between the ages of 20 and 40.
Hey,
so
look, they can de-age anybody
that's
now
true.
With computers.
That's true. Nowadays, they are doing that. So it basically, it almost sounds like they're kind of going back towards the Michael Keaton.
Right, right.
Because they were more comic-y characters.
Yeah, the Tim Burton versions.
Right.
And even going back with the darker
versions of it.
You know?
And then the third villain is Catwoman. Meow. And she's basically described as the Gotham City burglar who wears the tight one-piece outfit, uses the whip. And basically they're looking for an actress between the ages of 20 and 30. So,
oh, sure, they're going to restrict it to an actress now. Huh?
Right, so that they know will definitely, you know, be a female. And again, everything's been kind of very generic descriptions of what they're looking for. Now, kind of the surprise villain is kind of the C-list villain, according to this article, will be Firefly. So Firefly will be reportedly making his proper big screen debut in this adaptation. as a parent secondary villain. Basically, it's a professional arsonist known as Firefly. Basically, attempts to burn everything, you know.
Not the sci-fi version of Firefly. This is
right, totally the different
comic version
right.
of Firefly.
They're looking for a male actor between the ages of 20 to 30.
Age discrimination.
Now, of course, what I thought was interesting is besides any character that hasn't been in, if there's a DC character that's been in the comics but hasn't been any of the movies or any of the TV shows, I honestly don't know who any of them are. So that's why, for me, watching Gotham, it was kind of like, ooh, who's this? And, right. you know, it was a surprise.
Well, Gotham was fun to watch because you saw the character before they became a villain.
Right.
And you didn't know who they were going
right.
to develop
Right, who were
into.
They going to turn into? But then when they turned into somebody, I was like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Where you knowing, you know, having a little bit more knowledge
right.
of it, you were kind of like, oh, and I'd be like, huh? Oh, that's cool. But what I thought was interesting was that in Gotham, Firefly was a woman.
Right.
So when I saw this, I was like, Firefly's a guy?
But Firefly was still a C-list villain in Gotham.
Right,
too,
exactly. So. She was only in a couple of episodes,
right.
you know, anyway. So that was, you know, interesting. It was kind of cool. They were talking about that it might be set in the 1990s period,
right.
Which kind of gives me that Tim Burton-y feel, you know, because that's when his, you know, Batman movies, you know, were made. But I guess,
right.
you know, because even Gotham, even though it was kind of modern, you knew it kind of wasn't because, like, they had cell phones, but
they were the old flip phones.
They were old flip phones and all the cars were really old. So you really had no idea what the time frame was. So that was kind of interesting. So obviously it is going to be a 3-picture deal because it is going to be a trilogy, which is kind of, you know, it's not unheard of these days for actors to sign, you know, multi project deals, you know.
Just look at Marvel. They did it right.
Right, exactly. So, you know, basically right now, Penguin and Catwoman are definitely confirmed to appear. The others are kind of, you know, the hinting at aspect. But then we might see more villains, you know, throughout the movies because, you know, you're talking the 3 movies, you know, are these 3 just going to be in the first one? Or
see, my concern is if they're going to stick 4 villains in one movie,
it's
that's
be,
already killed Batman movies and Spider-Man
right.
movies with overkill.
Right. So, or maybe they kind of introduce towards the end of one, you know, one kind
right,
of comes in,
right.
you know, again, you know, we're not really sure yet. Obviously, there's going to be younger versions of familiar faces. So you're going to get to see the Commissioner Gordon and you're going to get to see Alfred, you know, the younger versions of them, the Boy Wonder, Robin, you know, is he going to be in there? And they were saying that currently he's part of Titans, so you're not really sure which version of Dick Grayson, you know, you're going to get because he has to ditch Robin to become Nightwing, all that stuff that I don't even know about because I just know Batman and Robin. I'm a simple kind of Batgirl person. Not really a DC person, so, you know, it's kind of go shoo over my head. But the focus will also be more on his detective skills. So he's not really the crime fighter. It's more, you know, solving cases. So in that respect, it's going to be more of a noir tale, you know, kind of like the old detective films, you know, from, you know, the 1940s. It kind of, you know, almost sounded like that.
It was a dark and stormy night.
And the Batman walked in. But production will begin next year. And the other interesting thing that I thought was kind of cool was that the Batman is kind of inspired by Jekyll and Hyde. That late last year, Reeves was asked about his take on the Bruce Wayne Batman divide and which of them is real and which of them is the facade. And interestingly, when it came to his inspiration of how the aspects of the characters were handled, he actually pointed to Jekyll and Hyde being a factor. And it was something, you know, when I read that, I was like, I never really thought about.
So Batman with a tie-in to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
There you go. Totally. You got another crossover.
I'll start writing it now.
Mic drop. So, I don't know. The more I read about this, the more it doesn't sound so bad. It might actually be.
It's certainly got its appeal.
Yeah.
It's catering to a different audience than what we're used to,
right.
I think.
And I know the more recent Batman movies I haven't seen. They were too dark for me. They were too, you know, they didn't have, you know, any appeal where the older ones, you know.
Well, they were terrible too. I mean, Batman vs. Superman, terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Justice League was really just the next sequel to Superman.
Right, right.
They just had a couple other people show up at the same time.
Hey, we're having a party. You want to come over?
I still say, you know, if DC was smart, they'd stop making films and stick to TV.
They do much better with that. So, yeah. So, again, we shall see.
Cool. That's it for entertainment news.
That is it for entertainment news, my love.
So we shall come back with our insightful picks of the week. And as always, my dear, the floor is yours.
It is.
Well, half yours. I pay half the mortgage.
Oh, okay. So, hey, DC. Let's talk about a DC show that's not DC, but it's a DC character.
Sure.
So, my insightful pick for this week is Krypton. It is actually on the Sci-Fi Network. It just started season 2. Just last week. The first season actually started March of 2018. And so basically the story of Krypton is basically the story of Superman's grandfather. So we're talking before, you know, he's born, before his dad is even born. So it's, you know, it's, you don't need to know the story of Superman to know anything about these characters, because for me, these were all characters that I really didn't even know, except for, like, Zod. Like, he was the only one that, hey, I know him.
And yet somehow he's in this.
Right, exactly. It kind of makes you go, And then, of course, there's that whole time traveler guy who...
Which they've not really explained.
They haven't really explained him in the first season of how, you know, he's a friend of Superman's. So you kind of have that Superman tie-in.
Right.
But it's, you know, Superman's grandfather, his great-grandfather, and his great-great-grandfather is basically who the story is really, you know, about. And it's interesting because it's dark and gritty. It kind of reminds me, I was trying to think of what else it reminded me of, because it wasn't your typical Superman, and, you know, it's not a superhero.
Right, they don't have superpowers.
Nobody has,
still on Krypton.
Right, everybody's on Krypton. Nobody has a power.
Because Superman's power comes from the color of our sun.
Right.
They don't have that, so these are all regular civilians.
Right, they're all regular civilians, but you see the hierarchy. Like, you have the military faction, you have the ambassadors or the government factors, and then you have, you know, the everyday people, but then you have the people that, you know, have no rights, you know, the homeless people.
It's a complicated caste system that they use.
Right, right. Like, and, you know, certain people aren't allowed to talk to other people, and,
right,
you know, and childbirth is basically predetermined, and again, the whole class system. So it was, the first couple of episodes were a little hard to follow because, again, I had in my mindset Superman, and,
right,
you know.
And the only thing you see as Superman is his slowly dissolving cape.
Right, exactly. We haven't started to watch season 2 yet, so that's, we're a couple days behind on TV watching. Darn summertime. Too many other things going on. But it's a very good show. We both enjoyed it, and we were both excited to hear that, you know, season 2 was coming, and, you know, so it's definitely, if you're into Superman, this is definitely something that, you know, that you might like, because, again, you know, especially if you're, you know, a fan of the comics, you probably know a lot more of these characters, you know, than than I do, since I admitted that I'm not a DC person. Right. I only know the characters from, you know, from the different movies and television shows. But very well done, you know, and interesting twists and who's backstabbing who and you know, a lot of that going on. So highly recommend it.
Cool. Good pick. Good
Thank
pick.
You.
So my pick this week is it's a documentary. I was going to pretend that
really?
It wasn't, but it really
you
is.
You could lie.
But it is a documentary about UFOs, so that should count for something.
There you go. Something different.
This is a new show on the History Channel called Unidentified, Inside America's UFO Investigation. And this is a documentary show that is based on actual footage that's been taken. I'll read the about here. It's rather long, so I'll try to be brief with it.
Okay.
In December of 2017, the New York Times published a stunning front-page exposé about the Pentagon's mysterious UFO program, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, AATIP. Featuring an interview with a former military intelligence official and special agent in charge, Luis Elizondo, who confirmed the existence of the hidden government program, the controversial story was the focus of worldwide attention. Previously run by Elizondo, ATIP was created to research and investigate unidentified aerial phenomenon, or UAPs, including numerous videos of reported encounters, three of which were released to a shocked public in 2017. Elizondo resigned after expressing to the government that these UAPs could pose a major threat to our national security and not enough was being done to deal with them or address our potential vulnerabilities. Now, as part of a history's underground, as a part of history's groundbreaking new six-part, one-hour limited series, Unidentified Inside America's UFO Investigation, Elizondo is speaking out for the first time with Tom DeLonge, co-founder and president of To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, and Chris Mellon, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense and Intelligence, to expose a series of startling encounters and embark on a fascinating new investigation that will urge the public to ask questions and look for answers. The series will reveal newly authenticated evidence and footage, interviews from eyewitnesses and former military personnel who have never spoken out before, and extensive breakthroughs in understanding the technology behind these unknown phenomena in our skies. That's a mouthful.
Sure was.
So basically what they're doing is taking actual known documented accounts, talking to witnesses, some of which they are protecting their identity because they're still active duty military personnel.
Okay.
And trying to bring this to light. No one is saying that these are aliens. That's the first thing that people kind of have to get over.
Right.
What they're doing is they're looking at basically telemetry that have been captured. There was the one episode details an incident over 5 days of a training incident off the coast of California near Catalina Island, where a U.S. carrier group tracked these objects that were performing aerial maneuvers that conventional vehicles could not do.
Okay.
For instance, they had one incident where it dropped from 30,000 feet to sea level in what would have amounted to about the speed of Mach 60.
Oh, wow.
And there's no known, you know, country on Earth at this time that possesses technology that can do that.
Right, right.
So they're not saying that it's aliens. What they're saying is whatever's doing these things, whatever has these capabilities is far in excess of our own technical capabilities. Basically, we're hopelessly outmatched when it comes to even tracking things like this.
It almost sounds like a modern version of Project Blue Book.
It does, yeah. Yeah, and there were three specific incidents, as the About Us said. They were released to the public. You mm-hmm. can go out and you can look at these things as part okay. of the Freedom of Information Act.
Mm-hmm.
There was this one particular incident over the course of 5 days was tracked on radar and different things. They had one where there was a FLIR pod on one of the F-18s that was flying on the carrier that actually took images of this thing.
Oh, wow.
And they described it quite accurately as it looks like a chiclet. You know? And that's what this thing looks like.
It looks like a little chiclet. Okay.
So the show itself is very well done, and he goes to various locations, talks to different witnesses, and the one thing that he does emphasize in each of these interviews is, I'm not going to ask you anything about classified data
mm-hmm.
or sources or anything. He says, if any classified information is revealed, we'll stop the recording immediately.
Interesting.
So he's managed to get some people who have refused to talk to do interviews. He's brought in aeronautics experts, including someone from the National Transportation Board, to actually look at data that track these objects to basically provide their expert opinion as to what could do this, what kind of capabilities, and who possesses those things.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the names that you have in here are not insignificant people. I mean, mm-hmm. you have the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense and Intelligence, and a government, former government official doing this, you know, so it's not, you know, crazy guys in the back room with freaky right. hair pretending that there's aliens.
Right, right. Reputable people.
Reputable yeah. people that are reporting these things. I mean, and you have to go back and you look at even Project Blue Book is mm-hmm. a fictionalized version of these accounts.
Mm-hmm.
But reputable people reported back then. A lot right. of that was brushed under the carpet. Even Jimmy Carter
mm-hmm.
at one point in time filed a UFO sighting
mm-hmm.
before he was president. So, you know, and the concern that they have here is not, oh, we're looking for aliens and we're finding aliens. It's these people can do things that our technology is so far behind on that if there's a threat somewhere, whether it's another country that's acting or you know, what's the plausible explanation?
Mm-hmm.
If there isn't, then what are the theoretical explanations? So they go about it in a very analyst-type way of trying to figure out what it is rather than saying, oh, okay, well, we saw a writing with a guy with a big head on a tomb in Egypt, so there
right,
has to be
right,
aliens.
So there has to be something. Oh, okay.
So, but a very good show. It's entertaining. It's kind of frightening, some of the accounts that they reveal. And it's definitely worth watching.
Okay. Very so, cool. Good pick.
Unidentified Inside America's UFO Investigation, History Channel, Fridays at 10 Eastern.
Very cool.
Shall we come back for some afterthoughts, my dear?
We shall.
Awesome. And your afterthoughts.
So, we just found out that Star Wars Celebration Anaheim 2020 dates have been announced. So, obviously, Star Wars Celebration just occurred a couple months back. And we have the new dates already for 2020, which will be August 27th. Through the 30th out in, like I said, Anaheim, California. Tickets will actually be going on sale June 21st. So already
that's tickets. A little bit further drive than Chicago was.
Right, right. So for this one, we'd probably want to fly if we wanted to go.
So are we going to this one?
I don't know. Are we?
I think for the sake of the podcast, we have to go.
Right? Sure. So
we need to cover live. We're broadcast
there you go.
Live
we'll
from
broadcast
Anaheim.
Broadcast live. That gives us like a year to prepare. So I think we're good.
Works for me.
Works for you. Sure. And one of the other things we talked about last week that we're actually going to be attending tonight is if you happen to be local, the Mann Music Center in Philadelphia does various movies with full orchestras during the summer. So we are seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark tonight. Next month, we're actually seeing The Empire Strikes Back. If you're a Harry Potter fan, which our daughter is not, as we've mentioned numerous times, July 20th, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire will be in concert with the Philadelphia Orchestra. If you are a science type person, there's the movie The Voyage to the Moon, the 50th anniversary. They're going to be doing that with the Philadelphia Orchestra as well on July 24th. Grease, you know, if you're a fan of the musical Grease, they're going to be doing that August 15th with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. Now, I did find a website, filmconcertslive.com, that I believe is the production company of, at least Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know if Empire Strikes Back is part of that as well. And they actually do it all over the country, various movies. So they have Skyfall, they have How to Train Your Dragon, they do Jurassic Park, The Addams Family, Star Trek Beyond, Jaws. So various different movies, various different places throughout the country. If when you click on the calendar, it'll actually tell you where the different movies will be. So if that's something that you're interested in seeing, last year we saw Star Wars: A New Hope with
that was fantastic
with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and that was just really cool because again, it's a movie you've seen a gazillion times, but to actually see them, you know, see the orchestra performing, and you realize, wow, the orchestra plays a whole lot. It's not that quiet of a movie. So we're obviously looking forward to Raiders of the Lost Ark tonight, and obviously Empire Strikes Back next month. So again, if you're a fan of, you know, movies and, you know, seeing it in a different way, and you're local to Philadelphia, you know, the man does it. But like I said, I found, you know, the other website. So, you know, if you're not from, you know, the area here, you might have a local venue, you know, that is showing them around in your area.
Very cool. I think that's it for the podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
We do record the podcast at some point over the weekend, usually. They go live Monday morning on YouTube and Buzzsprout, our website as well at insightsintothings.com. You get to it at podcast.insightsintoentertainment.com, youtube.com/insightsintothings as well. And we broadcast them live typically Sunday evenings and again Tuesday or Wednesday. Keep an eye out on our twitch.tv/insightsintothings channel for the events. And I think that's it.
I think that is.
Well, thank you for another fantastic podcast, my dear.
Thank you for joining me as always.
And we'll talk to everyone next week.
Have a good one, guys.